Game On on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
And our thanks as always to Jenny Green. It is Thursday, the 18th of February, and you are very welcome to Game On.
Coming up today, former Ireland captain Lynn Cantwell on her new role with the Springboks. Plus, we've cleared contract news from Munster and Leinster unite the Byrne brothers.
But yeah, no, great. Obviously, the two of them, they know each other very, very well. Having kicked ball around the back garden for many, many years together. So, yeah, it's something that we wanted to see for a while. So it gives us a chance to see what it looks like.
Conan Byrne, a man of many talents, is triple screening for us. Manchester United, Leicester and Spurs are all underway in the Europa League.
There are incredible number of matches. We are, as I was saying, going to the 10th and we are not even in the last 16. We are in the last 32. So long competition. Very good teams. You just look to the English teams that are in the competition and you realize how strong the competition can be. We are one of the 32 teams that has a chance to win it, and we are going to try.
Plus, Jeff Shepherd gives us an open American view on Serena's Australian Open exit.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us, our number is 51552. You can tweet at Game On 2FM. Donnacha O'Callaghan, good evening.
How are you, Damien? How are you
keeping? I'm in good form. I'm alive and I'm well, and I again enjoyed that little bit of silence sitting in a room on my own.
With a ticking clock.
I shouldn't go on. The clock didn't seem to be ticking quite as bad today, but maybe that's something to do. Maybe my hearing isn't as sensitive as it once was.
Absolutely. There's lots going on, though, isn't there?
There's plenty. Now, I want to talk to you. It was a strange situation a couple of weeks ago. It felt like if you walked through the door of Ulster Rugby, you would leave. You could just go in to go to the club shop and you'd leave with a contract.
There we go.
Because every day somebody seemed to get a contract. Well, yeah. Obviously, the man with the big bag of contracts found his way down the M1 and then found his way down found his way down the motorway to Limerick, and he's now dished him out to Munster.
He did. I like the way Munster did it. They announced 8 players today have signed contracts. 4 of them are Irish internationals, so Niall Scannell, Rory Scannell, Jack O'Donoghue and Shane Daly. And then there is contract news for Calvin Nash, Liam Coombs, Alex McHenry and the brilliant Craig Casey, who was unlucky not to get a run last weekend but is a promising 9. So Damien, it is good news, I think, even just for the players themselves. Contract negotiations are really tough, you know. It's a really uncertain time, and for these guys to have a little bit of security, and for me, these guys are the drivers of Munster. The likes of Pete and CJ and Keith Earls, who we're all hoping will sign up soon with IRFU contracts, they'll come and go into the environment. But the likes of the Scannells, the Jack O'Donoghues, the Shane Daly's, they have to be the drivers now for Munster, a bit like the John Kelly's, Anthony Horgan's, Anthony Foley's when in our time.
Yeah, and realistically as well, they are the bread and butter of the squad, because you're going to lose some money to the international camp. You hope that you're going to have some money involved, but you need those lads who are Munster true and true to drag you through the dark, less than glamorous weeks.
Absolutely, and you need them to have aspirations, and you will with both Scannells. With Jack, they want to play for Ireland, so they want to, you know, push on, and you know the best way of getting there is being successful, and I think we're seeing that with Leinster, with Harry and Ross Byrne. You know, the more successful you are, the better the shop window to play for Green.
The rumour mill has Keith Earls signing a 1-year contract, CJ and Peter O'Mahony signing 2-year deals. You'd like to imagine that, you know, your Johnny Sextons, your, like, there's a whole heap of them out of contract.
Yeah.
But that business is all kind of done at this stage, and it's just a case of, you know, it's done and dusted, it's not dragging through the Six Nations, and it's just a case of when to announce it.
Yeah, you'd like to think so, but in the classic line of the year, in a year like no other, the kind of golden rule around the squad was you always wanted to have your contracts locked up by the end of kind of November. Coming into Christmas should be the latest you're doing it. So now we're into February and there's players still getting across the line. So I do think we will see some news of players maybe moving on, but I think it's, Damien, it's tiered, you know, it really is. There is your marquee players, and they're set on higher money and probably deserve higher money.
Like you were, Donegan.
I was for a while, but then I dropped back down, and you have to kind of understand that it's a cycle as well, and that you have to, like, my first contract, I shared a contract with Marcus Horn. Myself and Marcus Horn shared a contract at Munster, which, I'll be honest, if you mentioned...
Sorry, how do you share a contract? Sorry. I was trying to process that there. Apologies for the slight delay. I was trying to process how you share a contract. Like, do you get the training kit Monday, Wednesday, Friday? He gets it Tuesday, Thursday, and whatever else.
At the time, Munster contracts, and I don't mind saying that they were 30 grand, and myself and Marcus got 15 each. And I remember I subbed European Cup that year in 2000, and I said to Declan Kidney, you know, last year went really well. Do you think I could push up? And he was there. Well, what do you want me to do? Give you 20 and give Marcus 10?
And you said yes.
I didn't. The ruthless side of me now would absolutely say, give Marcus 3, I'll take 27. Yeah. But no, it was different times. And it was, rugby was different then. You were lucky to be calling it your living, you know?
I meant to put a kind of a breaking news jingle on the cartwheel, because we're going to go to Conan Byrne over the course of the programme as something happens somewhere else. So, if you were going to do a breaking news sound effect on, what would it sound like?
Oh, Jamie, I don't know. Elsa singing Let It Go is probably the best I could do for you.
Lads, can we get Elsa singing Let It Go? Conan Byrne, there's been a goal for Spurs.
There has been, Damien, yes. And it has been coming over the last 10 minutes or so. They started the game very, very well. Irish international Matt Doherty got down the right. Lucas Moura picked him out. Played in Gareth Bale, and with his weaker right foot, played it across. And who else at the moment? The goal-scoring sensation, Heung-min Son, with a diving header to put Spurs 1-0 up, and fully deserved.
Okay, I know you're balancing all the screens, but United away to Real Sociedad tonight. Sorry, Spurs away to Wolfsburg or AC. United, by all accounts, should be ahead after 7 minutes.
Yeah, they did have a great chance. Marcus Rashford got down the right-hand side, and keeper made a good save. Alex Romero in the Real Sociedad net. But having said that, United could be one down as well. And their former player, Adnan Januzaj, had a brilliant opportunity to score inside the first 3 minutes. Alexander Isak played him down the right-hand side. He cut back inside himself after a mistake by Eric Bailly. And curled in. It was like a bit like Mahrez's goal against Everton last night for Manchester City. He curled it, but this time it went to the far side of the post and not inside it. So lucky escape for United. Wan-Bissaka's already been booked as well. So he has to be careful for the rest of the game, but it's a very, very open game in Turin, actually, where they're playing tonight. So, I can see goals happening there.
And Leicester City away to Slavia Prague. What your early impressions on what you've been able to watch of that?
Yeah, not much now, because the other two games have been pretty intense. But it's great news for the League of Ireland. Shane Flynn, former Bray Wanderers and St. Joseph's player, is on the bench. So hopefully if they go a couple of goals ahead, then he might be brought on, which would be fantastic for Shane.
Conor, before you go, how are you managing to watch all these great games? Have you three on the go, on screens? How are you doing this?
Yeah, well, I've dumped my whole family out of the kitchen. And I have a telly, a laptop, and an iPhone. So or an iPad, should I say. So yeah, managing, but as I said, having to adapt and being a teacher, you have to be organised. So I think I'm doing okay so far.
Yeah, you can submit your match reports on Seesaw later on.
What a multitasker.
We'll send you back our assessment on Aladdin. And if you don't have kids,
please go to the classroom, actually, that's better.
Right, Conan, good luck. We'll chat to you over the course of the programme. Thanks, Conan.
Come on, Damien, as we mentioned earlier, there was great news today when South Africa Rugby announced that our own Lynn Cantwell would become the first woman high performance manager, a role perfectly suited to our centre star with over 86 caps for our country and always giving it nothing but a high performance. We're delighted our former captain and now South African high performance manager joins us. Lynn, congrats.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks a million. I'm laughing at all the inside jokes of the homeschooling there. Well done, you guys, for keeping it up.
Well, we should claim no credit. Fantastic news today, Lynn. you know, for yourself, I know it'll be a great one. You would always want it to be in green, but South Africa, what an opportunity for you.
Yeah, thanks. Look, it's really positive position, I think, for the game to be in Like you all know Rassie well from Munster and the job that he did and Jacques did when they came back to the, with the Springboks, and obviously they won the World Cup in, at the end of 2019, and I think at that stage Rassie moved up to the director of rugby, and obviously all of the games are under his responsibility now, and he looked at the women's game and knew that it wasn't where it needed to be, and an awful lot of work needed to be done in it. So they started to engage in that process to try and figure that out, and I've been in contact with them last year, just in line with trying to figure out what's going on, just at an inquiry level. And then earlier on this year, just late last year, they offered me the high performance job, and we talked long and hard about it, because you know, you guys know I've got a young family and we're here, etc. But we thought long and hard about it, and we said we'd give it a whirl. We can always, you know, if it doesn't work out, we can always go home, kind of thing. But it would be a tough one to say no to.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll get into the family side of it, but could you just help explain the role, high performance manager? I think everyone within the game now sees the different kind of, you know, directors of rugby, coaches. Can you explain what your role is and what the target with South Africa is?
Yeah, good question. So like in any game, there's obviously a participation side to it and a performance side to it. And the participation side to it, I suppose, would be your grassroots up to kind of 16 to 18. And then after that, it technically shifts into performance from an adult point of view. And a high performance manager would be, what they're focusing on that is they have participated up until this point and focused on trying to get girls involved, and it was probably like an intermittent type of an approach, but now they are trying to focus their minds to performance. So there's a kind of a quite a, like a porous pathway in that there's girls able to play at 16 and 18 and then not at 20, and you know, lots of the similar stories across women's sport across the world, and women's rugby across the world, but they're trying to just plug all those pathways and try and put the right things in place to map for performance. Women are like 14th in the world at the moment from a 15s point of view, and they want to see that change because they want to perform like in the world stage, and they want their women's Springboks to be competing like ultimately like their men are. But obviously there's a lot of work to be done for that to happen.
The line is tearing up on us ever so slightly, but we'll stick with it and hopefully it'll hold up. Just to look ahead to the year, you know, to talk about performance, South Africa are already qualified for the 2021 Rugby World Cup. We hope that Ireland will be there as well. I was looking back over fixtures in recent years, and obviously I think last year or 2019, five matches that included the Africa Women's Cup. Is game time a significant challenge in terms of the frequency with which the international side can get together, and then ultimately the frequency with which they can be exposed to the next generation of players?
Yeah, like it's really fascinating, and I know Dunica has done lots of work down in Africa too, and it's a fascinating environment, and the geography of it is one of the biggest blockers for them from a competition point of view. So they actually pulled their 15s team off the World Series from 2014 to 2018 because of funding. They hadn't got the funding for it, and because it's just so expensive to compete, and they went back on then in 2018. So that 2018, those couple of fixtures were trying to just find their feet and figure out like how much ground have they lost, and I think they lost all of the games, but you know, they would have learned lots in that time. So I think now, obviously COVID happened then as well, and you know, that's kind of affected everybody, but I suppose now they're in camp full time. They've contracted 19 players. They will break for a club competition, obviously just kind of COVID dependent, and then they'll go back in full time in July and August before they fly to over to New Zealand. So like it's a very different landscape to say that there'll be the normal performance things that you want to put in place for any team to perform, like your, you know, good coaching and sports science and medicine and your daily training environment and your culture, etc. But I think what the landscape for the African girls is often their home environment, they won't have access to the type of training facilities, etc., that we would probably take for granted. So the centralised programme tends to work for them more. So look, it's really interesting culture, it's really interesting landscape, but you're right, it's quite unique to them, and you know, and I'll have to work hard to try and figure all of that out, but yeah, look, we'll give it a good crack.
You've done great work over here. I know you're modest and you will hate the sound of praise coming back down the circuit at you, but you've been a phenomenal ambassador for women's sport in this country, and you've done great work largely behind the scenes with the Women in Sport Committee within Sport Ireland. And I'm wondering, are there significant parallels between the story of women's sport in Ireland and perhaps the challenges and the landscape that awaits in South Africa in terms of you know, sport being a great tool for unification and a great tool to obviously generate participation, but there's a massive sway in terms of the prominence of the men's teams in South Africa compared to the women's teams?
Yeah, loads, Damo. And there's one important thing there, just from a Sport Ireland point of view. Sport Ireland, like John Tracy, I spoke to John at the very, very start when I was offered the job, just to say about the role that I'm doing at a board and the Women in Sport Committee, and see where I stood with that. And he said, you know, the world is virtual now and all of our meetings are virtual. So he was happy for me to continue with the work that I was doing there. There was no conflicts or anything. So that's great. So I'm still going to do that as normal. But to your point about what South African rugby is kind of seen as in South Africa, like, I think the story of the 2019 World Cup final was inspirational for them, and that Stronger Together was their hashtag, and a lot of it was about them performing as a multicultural group, and they did that. And what I'm seeing is the effect that that's had on the ground is that's very much so had a unifying approach, because there's a huge transformational strategy in South African rugby and from the government to try and drive racial equality. So, like, within that, from a female point of view, like, the parallels with the work that we've done in Ireland, the kind of progress towards diversity, inclusion, and progress towards gender equality and racial equality are all based on people changing and embracing what is right and the norms of today, as opposed to the kind of the old stereotypes of the past. You know, what their experience from a gender equality is in a different level to kind of our first world approach to that. But equally, if we can work towards making progress in that space, then it'll be, and do it through sport, then, you know, when we all know the value that can have. So hopefully, I'm sure we'll make a big dent in that.
Lynn, personally, everyone in the rugby family is so pleased for you, but with the likes of yourself and Sophie Spence heading off, part of it feels like we're losing an awful of a lot of our homegrown intellect that we should probably be ploughing into our own game. What's the plan for you? Would you like to, you know, gain the experience maybe with an eye of coming home in time to a role like this?
Yeah, Dunica, it would be lovely. And I suppose, yeah, there's a little bit of a sadness around that, isn't there, when you know, you can't apply your trades to your own country, but equally there's lots of opportunities there, and we see lots of the boys that are abroad and doing that, and, you know, maybe be able to bring that home, and that may be the focus one day. But you're right, look, I think the biggest attraction that I had to the South African role was the commitment and the intention from Rassie and Charles, and the will and the want to make a difference. And, you know, that's the biggest barrier, isn't it? So if that's in place, then I'd be delighted to help and to drive that, and hopefully in the future, you know, we might see that in different spheres in Ireland.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Lynn, the family, how are you going to travel? Where are you going to stay over there? Have you even looked into it yet?
Yeah, look, it's hard to, I've been trying not to look too far ahead, but every now and again I look at my husband's laptop and I see, you know, Cape Town and Google and places, but I haven't been looking too far ahead just because COVID is so bonkers. But yeah, I'm working virtually at the moment. The plan is to move over in July, and it's just kind of visas and COVID dependent. But yeah, we'll relocate there, and I think we're happy that it's just relatively the same time zone, and you can fly overnight and be there the next morning. So all of those things are kind of comforting. So I don't feel like we'll be too far away from home. And I think if anything, you know yourself how kind of confined we are working in COVID. You realise that you're confined within your and reliant of your family and well able to kind of cope. So I think we'll just kind of visualise transferring that to a different country, and you know, hopefully it'll go okay. And we've got open door policy for all the visitors and all of the O'Callaghans.
Careful now, because they'll turn up.
Omar's to come down.
I already was texting her during the week, Donica. You know, I've had 48 hours head start. I've got a bed laid already. So
I don't want a bed, Lynn. I just want a sun lounger, and you know that.
Yeah. And he'd be the only man who'll arrive over with the tan already looking better than it would do when he came home a couple of weeks later. Lynn, to say publicly what I said to you privately, I'm so delighted for you, and I hope people in South Africa appreciate the force that is about to land and are ready for the force that's about to land. So I wish you nothing but success to you and the family, and thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Oh, thanks, boys.
That's Lynn Cantwell, former Irish rugby international, chair of the Women in Sport Committee with Sport Ireland, and South African rugby's new high performance manager for women's sports.
They've landed on their feet there, Damien.
I'm telling you. Come here, I've a story for you here. Have you watched Sunderland Till I Die on Netflix?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. Although parts of it, me was thinking, spend less time on the documentary, lads, and more time worrying about training and getting things sorted.
So the guy who was the owner of the club in the most recent series, Stuart Donald, he's been making a big deal of trying to sell the club. So the sale went through today.
Oh, very good.
It's been sold to a 23-year-old.
Okay, sorry, I don't know why I'm laughing, but fair play to him.
Well, Sunderland have announced that a 23-year-old French businessman, I don't know if it's Kyril or Cyril, K-Y-R-I-L, Louis Dreyfus, has acquired the controlling interest in the club. He is the son of the former owner of Olympique Marseille.
Wow.
But like a 23-year-old, I tell you, the next season is going to be interesting to watch. We have to go back to... Oh, we never got our sound effect. Lads, they let me down.
I know.
You're going to have to sing. You're going to have to sing Let It Go.
Let it go. More than happy to.
Yeah, I know.
Although even my kids get embarrassed at this stage. It's so outdated. Even The Greatest Showman is gone.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't really know.
It's all about Descendants. Have you watched Descendants in your house?
Yes, absolutely.
It's all about Descendants in our house. We have a Descendants themed birthday coming up and everything. It's not for me, obviously, for one of the kids.
I gladly, COVID allowing, I'd be well up for making that party.
Well, come here, I could Zoom you. My daughter would only be too happy to have Donica O'Callaghan on her Zoom birthday party.
She wouldn't hear.
Let's go back to Conan Byrne's kitchen. Goals of plenty, Conan.
Yeah, you've come at the right time, guys. A couple of goals have gone in the last couple of minutes. And United fans will be absolutely delighted. Their main man, Bruno Fernandes, yet again, comes up trumps. A brilliant ball over the top by Marcus Rashford. And it looked as if Bruno Fernandes was going to be beaten to it by not one, but not two, but three Real Sociedad players. They all banged into each other. Ball dropped for Fernandes, and he had a simple tap-in. So 1-0 for... Manchester United, and fully deserved. McTominay had a great opportunity as well just before the goal, and Marcus Rashford had an easy chance literally a minute before Fernandes opened the scoring, when Bruno himself, he played the ball across the box. Rashford had an easy tap in, but Romero had made an unbelievable save. And the other goal of the night has come in Austria. Spurs have taken a 2-goal lead, and that man Gareth Bale has got on the score sheet. He was played down the right, and a great bit of skill. He chopped back up inside. I think the defender has gone off to the shops to get a newspaper and a Mars bar after it. And Gareth Bale just buried it into the far corner. It was a magnificent finish, and 2-0 for Spurs.
You're very good at this. You're going to put some of us out of a job. Three televisions on the go and not a bother on them. So that's the latest from Conan Byrne. We're going to chat rugby, Donica, after the break. So quick break to take. Back in a moment.
With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on. Rugby.
Okay, welcome back. There might not be any Six Nations actions this week, but Andy Farrell couldn't get away from the great Michael Corcoran, who caught up with him earlier today.
Yeah, I suppose you do have to watch every game, don't you, to understand it properly, because the statistics don't usually tell the full story. I thought in summary I thought we controlled the game pretty well in the first half. Obviously, the conditions didn't look like it on TV, but it was pretty wet out there to start with. So I thought we controlled the game pretty well, and I thought there was quite a bit of good play, and obviously not perfect, but after 23 minutes, you know, we possibly had an opportunity to go 10-0 up. Is that a different game from there on in? It possibly is. I think we lost a little bit of that control, certainly at the start of the second half, and we continued to try and chase the game a little bit instead of putting the ball in front of our forwards, whether that's wrong kick or pass. I thought we managed the game not quite as strongly as we could have done in that second half, and therefore didn't create as many chances as we possibly would have hoped. When you analyse the games, you know, you can look at it all sorts of ways, can't you? Really, you know, regarding the 14 man and game against Wales, and you know, we played some decent rugby against those, and you know, was we unlucky not to win? I don't believe it, unlucky, you know. So I'm not the type of guy that wants to make any type of excuses, you know, of anything that's happened within the squad. And I suppose form, not as much results. Obviously, results are pretty important for us in regards to the Six Nations. We've lost two, and that's the reality, you know. So we need to get back on the horse and put in a good performance and result against Italy.
I'm just wondering, after two rounds of the Six Nations Championship, how concerned are you at the attack side of the game? It just seems that there's a kind of a lack of a cutting edge there at the moment.
To say I'm concerned, obviously we'd be stating the obvious regarding the points that we've scored lately, where we're going, certainly behind the scenes, and what we've seen over some of the games, Corky, over the last year. I'm pretty confident in where we are going. The biggest thing for me is our understanding of our game understanding, but at the same time understanding where the space is, you know. And like I keep saying to you boys, and I ain't trying to make this complicated at all, because it's not complicated. It's unbelievably simple. The run kick or pass element, as far as game understanding or decision making is concerned, is where you can put pace onto the ball. You know, sometimes it's in front of you, sometimes it's to the side of you, sometimes there's no option whatsoever other than to run with brute force and do your best. You know, to do all that, you've got to be set and ready to go as a team, nice and early in the piece, because you don't get time at international football to do anything different if you're not set nice and early. Therefore, those spaces that you would normally set up at Pro 14 level, etc., tend to be there 30 seconds later, and they're not anymore. So we are creating opportunities through our game understanding. Are we seeing all those opportunities that we're creating, or executing on those opportunities that we're creating? No, not at this moment in time. That's obviously the work on, and that's where we need to get to.
And in terms of your approach, particularly for the Italian game, that's the one we're going to focus on. You know, there has been some suggestions that maybe some of the less experienced players should get a chance. But from your point of view, how are you going to approach a match like that?
I'll do what's right for the team, and what's right for the team is making sure that we get the best performance out of them. We will pick the strongest side that we need to make that happen.
Okay, very good, Damien. We'll come back to it, because Colin Byrne, there's been a goal for Spurs.
Yeah, another one. Donica 3-0 for Spurs now. And I missed this one. I only caught the replay of this because I was looking at a VAR incident over at in Slavia Prague with the Leicester game. Leicester could have had a penalty when they had a wonderful opportunity to get the ball into the box, and one of the defenders put out his arm. It looked as if it might have been on the line, but the referee gave a free kick instead. So that's how I missed the Spurs goal. But Lucas Moura, driving run, very, very good play, went past a couple of players and banged it into the bottom corner, leaving Coughlin with absolutely no chance. And it's great to see Matt Doherty in flying form. He assisted Gareth Bale earlier on. He's getting acres of space there tonight, so Stephen Kenny will be delighted with his performance so far. So Absolutely superb by Spurs. They have to count their goalkeeper, or congratulate their goalkeeper, should I say, that he made a world-class save from Dario Vizinger. And I think Dundalk fans will remember Dario Vizinger from scoring against them for Celje in the Champions League qualifying stages back in August. So he's moved now to Wolfsberger. He had a great opportunity to score, but Lloris pulled off a world-class save. So Spurs well on top, closing in on 5 minutes to go before the halftime break.
Thanks very much, Conor Moore from Conan, as those games in the round of 32 of the Europa League progress. Dunica, so Andy Farrell out to face the media today. I think 24 of the players, I think, are back in camp for a two-day camp as they start to build up to the Italy game on Saturday week. What will the mood be like? Because obviously the results, as he's touched upon there, aren't what they will have wanted them to have been, but for a stupid sending off and a misfire from your out half, they would have probably won in Cardiff, and they will certainly look at last weekend as one that got away as well.
I promise they won't, though, Damien. They will just actually take the losses, so it will actually be very low at the moment, and actually trying to build morale is a job in itself. I would say camp is spiky, I'd say the coaches are spiky, everyone is probably, I'd say those 24 lads, when they go against each other in a little bit of contact sessions, they could spark off, because I'll be honest, not getting results when you play for Ireland, it hurts, and it kind of hangs over you. I found it really interesting in listening to him there, though. If you really listen to what he's saying, it's the execution errors, and when you watch it back, it's the really small details. It's, you know, James Lowe's, he mentioned the try on the 24th minute. If you look that back and everyone executes their skills perfectly, if all the passes are perfectly placed like they should be at international level, James Lowe doesn't have that collision in the corner. Instead, it was kind of raced to the edge, which is fine in interprovincial, you know, Pro 14, as he's saying. Someone like James Lowe probably scores, but not at international level. So I think they'll be really hard on each other for the really small details, Damien. The make sure every pass you give me is right on the money in front and leads me keep my hips square and sit down a defender.
But then from Andy Farrell's perspective, and a couple of the papers over the last couple of days haven't been kind, and I'd never buy into this thing of I don't read the media, everything gets back to everybody, and come here, we can include radio programmes and everything on that he has been the subject of an awful lot of scrutiny, but does he necessarily deserve to be? Because you're talking about execution errors like that.
Yeah.
He must be tearing his hair out as much as anybody else, because he obviously can't cross the whitewash.
Absolutely, and I think what he's done over the last while as well, he is nearly reinforced how much of a player's coach he is. You know, but he's even his selection last week, backing Billy Burns, backing players, you know, that mightn't have had a good game against Wales, that the kind of James Lowe's, the Keith Earls that didn't play as well as we're all used to. When a coach backs you like that, Damien, you want to pay it back. So I'd say he's tight with a group. I don't think he'll be too worried about the noise from outside. Of course, it's important. And you mentioned it there. I swear, when you're in the camp, you never really listen to it. You don't read the papers and you do stay away from it. But the problem is you ring home and you're there, how's it going? There, did you see you got a 3 out of 10 in the paper? Yeah. And you're like, so it upsets family, but it doesn't really kind of upset the players. But I'll be honest, I don't think they'll be too happy with where they're going. But there's, look, all the provincial sides go out this weekend, and hopefully if we'll see a few guys throw down a marker to say, I want more time, I deserve to be there.
Okay, let's focus then on the interprovincials ever so slightly. Or sorry, not the interprovincials, but the provincials ever so slightly. There's an awful lot of Pro 14 action to look forward to this weekend, and obviously Leinster in action over the weekend. And for the first time, we will see the fantastic Byrne brothers team up together. Here's Leo Cullen.
Leo, good morning. Just before we talk about the game, there's a lot of chat this week, and I suppose in the last while, about alternatives for existing internationals and players. I'm getting at a kind of Johnny Sexton scenario here. You're fortunate that you've got two really good out halves in Ross Byrne and his brother Harry, and you've shown in your team selection that it's possible to accommodate both of them in a starting role, and Harry at 10 is an interesting choice for the game against the Dragons.
We weren't really too sure what was going to happen with Ross. He was on the bench and how much he was going to play, you know, and there's a couple of guys always during the Six Nations or the international windows, same as similar in November, or particularly during the Six Nations, obviously with these break weekends, and who's going to come back. And You will have seen the squad that is coming together, whatever that list of 24 players. So we had a good chunk of guys involved there, which is great. But yeah, Ross came back anyway, so we were keen to accommodate him and get him involved. Harry, you would have, might have seen down at the Aviva, but he got called in late with Johnny pulling out last week. So, but yeah, no, great. Obviously, the two of them, they know each other very, very well, having kicked ball around the back garden for many, many years together. So, yeah, it's something that we've wanted to see for a while. So it gives us a chance to see what it looks like. And the two of them have been great as well, you know, both very, very competitive in their own way. And obviously, Ross has played a lot of games for us over the last number of years. Harry's played a lot of games for us this year. I think he's probably had the most starts of our 10s this season, certainly in the Guinness Pro 14. So, yeah, it's a good opportunity for us to see the two of them together.
That's Leo Cullen earlier. Jack Conan making his 100th appearance for Leinster, there away to the Dragons. Claim prop Marcus Hannan is going to be on the bench. He's not even in the Leinster's academy yet. Jordy Murphy to captain Ulster against Glasgow. Donica, where do you fall into this Harry Ross Byrne equation and what the way forward is?
Yeah, well, I'd like to see both of them get time. I think we need to stress test them a little bit. The big thing for me, Damien, is everyone makes the comparison with international and Pro 14, and it's not like for like. Just the execution errors, like we spoke about. You make one mistake at international level, it gets proved, or it gets punished every time. I do like the look of Harry. I think he could be an incredible player. To be honest, I think Ross Byrne always puts in massive performances when he goes out, and I like to see him. This we've seen with England before this, and we've seen two pairs of first receivers. So I think that's what they'll do. But the dynamic of them being blunders is quite interesting as well going out. So it should be good to see.
And the news of the week, and I don't know how much you might have touched on this early in the week, Joey Carberry back in Munster training. If Joey Carberry doesn't play this season and it's for the benefit of his long-term career, then so be it. But to see those pictures and to see him back after not only the physical, but what must have been a massive mental strain as well, is brilliant to see.
Absolutely. And we spoke about Dan Levy in early in the week about how tough it is mentally, and for someone like Joey Carberry to come out the other side, and Damien, just to be around the normal training schedule is such a lift. You know, it's really tough for the injured players. They're on totally different schedules. They rarely get to hang out with the lads, and just to be back in the bubble and be around them again. But look, JJ has been going really well. There's Ben Healy, Jake Flannery, there's Jack Cronin down there. So there is no good competition, and I think we just need a few of them. I don't like this idea of, oh, let's give a few of them a go. Earn the shirt, lads. You know what I mean? They need to step up.
Okay. We'll see how it plays out in the coming weeks. We have a break to take. We're back to soccer and Conan Byrne's kitchen in 2 minutes.
FM. Game on. On 2FM. With Green Firm. Snack smart. With Green Firm's new high protein snacking range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide. Game on. Football.
Okay, Man United, Spurs, Leicester, all in Europa League action, and we're delighted that Conan Byrne has been keeping an eye on all three games. Conan, into half-time, how are they looking?
Yes, Manchester United fans will be happy with the scoreline. They're winning 1-0. Excellent goal by Bruno Fernandes, although the Real Sociedad rearguard didn't live up to expectations at all. The three players, including the goalkeeper, bashed off each other, and the ball just fell kindly for Fernandes, who just let it all happen in front of him, and he knocked it into an empty net. So really, really easy finish for Fernandes, who's been at the heart of everything. He set up a wonderful opportunity for Marcus Rashford as well, and they have been very good on the counter attack. United Sociedad have a lot more of the ball, but without doing much with it. But United, as I said, are counter-attacking really, really well. The long diagonal balls to either wing, to Rashford or Mason Greenwood have proven effective. They're very, very they should be 1-0 up anyway, or at least 1-0 given the opportunities that they've had. Sociedad haven't had much to do. Yeah, Spurs are flying as well. They've been completely dominant. It's a game men v boys, really. They look sharper. Their closing down is really, really good. Really, really impressive. Gareth Bale finally looks like a player that of old. He looks really, really sharp. Had a couple of opportunities. Scored a wonderful goal. But Wolfsburg aren't out of it in the sense that they've had a number of opportunities, and Lloris has had to be at his best, which he hasn't been this season to keep a clean sheet. And then at Leicester, then Brendan Rodgers' style of play, as we all know, he loves to have the ball. They've had a fair share of possession, and Prague have been dangerous on the counter attack themselves. But the left hand side of Luke Thomas and Harvey Barnes have proven very, very fruitful. They've been very, very good. James Maddison put in a free kick early in the game. The keeper was in complete no man's land. It fell to Harvey Barnes, probably the one person on the pitch that you'd like it to fall to, when he snatched at it and put it wide. And then just before the break, Tielemans had a half chance, but his volley just sailed wide. So scrappy enough, but no real opportunities in the Leicester game. But so far, so good in terms of the English sides.
Okay, Arsenal away to Benfica at 8 o'clock. Away to Benfica, 8 o'clock. Rangers in action against Royal Antwerp later on this evening as well. Conan, while we have you, just a quick word. Manchester City now 10 points clear at the top of the Premier League. It's a done and dusted deal. But with so much focus on other teams around the league, perhaps at City's cost in recent weeks, are we ignoring the fact that Pep Guardiola has possibly orchestrated the greatest team or the greatest season we've seen for Manchester City since he got there?
They've been absolutely outstanding, Damien, from the start. And I said before about their defensive line and how kind of unpredictable it has been over the last number of years, but it's very, very solid. And Kyle Walker has been out injured, and João Cancelo has come in. He's been really, really good. Played at left back yesterday. Zinchenko has been playing as well. But I think the transformation of John Stones has been absolutely immense. He's been absolutely superb at the heart of the defence, and he's certainly in line for Gareth Southgate's main defender in the Euros. As far as I'm concerned, he should be. He's been absolutely brilliant. Himself and Ruben Diaz at the back. I know he had a little bit of a rest yesterday. He brought in Laporte, who themselves, Diaz and Laporte, they had great games. So I think that when you win a league, you need a good defence. And if you have that, you're halfway there. And their attacking lineup, we don't need to really go into that, really. We know how impressive they've been. De Bruyne has been injured, but then you have Bernardo Silva. Phil Foden has come into his own. You have Raheem Sterling, who's taken on the armband, really, when De Bruyne is not there, and who's been absolutely fantastic, shown a great level of maturity that we hadn't seen before in Raheem, and he's been absolutely sensational. Still, Aguero's not even back in the team yet. So Pep Guardiola deserves a huge credit. And I haven't even mentioned Ilkay Gundogan either, who's been in fine goal-scoring form too from central midfield.
Just Champions League last night. We waxed lyrical last night about Kylian Mbappe the night before. And I wonder, was Erling Haaland watching that game somewhere thinking, I'm not going to let this fella get all the headlines? An assist and two goals in that 3-2 win for Borussia Dortmund over Sevilla. A phenomenal player.
It's like their new Ronaldo and Messi kind of fight, isn't it? The competition between the two future stars of world football. We saw how good Kylian Mbappe was the other night on Tuesday against a poor Barcelona team, let's be fair, and a very, very poor Barca defence. And Haaland again, as you say, he's been in fine goal scoring form in domestically in the German league, but this is his test, isn't it, in the big games. And what a player, for such a young player to be able to have that head in his shoulders and that composure in front of goal that we don't see really in young players. We see them, like, even in games today with Rashford snatching at chances when he really, really should be scoring goals. Haaland doesn't have that. He has that just natural instinct of putting the ball in the back of the net, and I think his ratio of chances to goals is absolutely frightening as well. So two great stars, and it's just great to see them playing in Champions League and in Europe.
Conan, thanks so much for your company. The second halves will hardly be underway before we finish at 7 o'clock, so we'll probably bid you farewell. On the off chance that something happens, we'll be back to you, but thanks for your time.
No problem at all, lads. Thank you.
Conan Byrne has been with us there watching those Europa League games. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're heading to the States with Shep afterwards.
Green Farm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.
The man open left. Game on. I in America.
Well,
Okay, time to cross the Atlantic. Although, Damien, looking at images of the States this week, you could confuse it for the Antarctic. At least we know there's one warm-hearted soul out there, our great teammate, Jeff Shepherd. Jeff, how are you?
I am indoors with electricity, so everything is good.
We've seen the images, Shep. Just give us the view on the ground. How cold is it out there?
So, I mean, look, I'm not trying to be like the guy from the South who complains because it went into the 40s one day, okay? I mean, it's like it's been below freezing, you know, below 32 degrees Fahrenheit here, you know, in parts of Mississippi and New Orleans, and I mean, for 4 or 5 days now. And I mean, we're just not used to this. But the thing is this weather system has impacted, you know, from Texas to Louisiana, all across the South. Now it's moving up into the Midwest, and now it becomes a newsmaker because it's now impacting New York and Washington, D.C., and, you know, the places that really count. So now it's news. But, yeah, I mean, the country is pretty much paralyzed right now. I mean, it's hard-pressed. If you were in, like, maybe Nashville and above, Nashville, Tennessee, driving around right now, it is, because it's not just a snowstorm, it's rainy and sleet and ice, and it has just been awful. It's been a very bad week over here.
Yeah, well, sorry to hear that, Shep, and we hope everyone's all right, especially around you. It has led to an awful lot of the NBA being postponed, and we'll get to all that, but we have to start with Serena Williams. She went out, made an emotional goodbye today to the Australian Open, which, of course, starts provoking everyone thinking about, you know, what next? Will she be back?
Yeah, she didn't want to, you know, she kind of almost got asked that question in her post-match press conference, and she said, if this was goodbye, you know, I really wouldn't be telling y'all people first, you know, I mean, she would make the decision herself, and I mean, I think anytime she makes an announcement, she'll do it on her own, but yeah, I mean, she loses in straight sets to Naomi Osaka. She is, you know, still at you know, I'm going to put this in quotes, only 23 Grand Slam championships in her career. She's still one shy of Margaret Court's record. And really emotional afterwards. You know, she got asked, you know, they showed just kind of a couple of questions, and she broke down kind of in the second half of the interview and just had to get up and go. I mean, she's 39 years old. We've seen the talk and heard the talk with Tom Brady for the last couple of years and Drew Brees, and you know how old these guys are and how long can they play. You know, she's not old, you know, in the world, but in the world of tennis, yeah, she's older. I don't know if maybe she doesn't play every single match, you know, or every tournament. I mean, she certainly doesn't need the money. She doesn't need the fame. She doesn't need the recognition. She's going to go down as the greatest women's tennis player probably of all time, I would say. I think that's a no-brainer. But, yeah, I it might be it. It may have been the end, at least in the Australian Open. We may see her the rest of this year. But, you know, who knows if she comes back next January, next February to try to, you know, play down in Australia again. We don't know that yet.
Shep, we've unfortunately spoken about so many tragic stories of former NFL players in particular in recent years, and we've focused on the duty of care that the sport might have to fellas when they, you know, drift off into retirement. And another very tragic loss from the NFL this week.
Yeah, former Tampa and San Diego wide receiver Vincent Jackson was found dead by authorities this week in a hotel room in Florida. And the details are just kind of slowly starting to come out. He'd been living there for a month or so, and his family knew he was there, and then they didn't hear from him for several days. They put out a missing report. The police found him. They canceled the missing persons report, and then housekeeper finds him several days later, and he's dead. So, obviously, there's going to be an investigation there. But, you know, Damien, it's hard for some of these athletes. I mean, you go from being young and you know, super gifted, money all over the place, fame, a lot of the things that come with all that stuff, and then you're not involved in the team sport anymore, and you're young. I mean, you're typically in your late 20s or early 30s when you retire from professional sports, and it's a lifestyle adjustment that you may not be prepared for, and not everybody, a lot of these guys don't handle it well. And, you know, we'll learn more about what was going on with Vincent Jackson's personal life and, you know, the tragedy that involved, you know, him, you know, dying alone in a hotel room. I mean, which is so sad. But hopefully his family will find some peace and maybe get some answers to the questions that they have.
You said it, Shep, absolutely, and especially at 38 years of age, it is very sad. Shep, we're tight on time, but and we didn't get to go through maybe the NBA like we'd like, but there is a bit of a player divide about the All-Star game.
Yeah, real quick. I mean, quite honestly, the players really don't want to play it, and the league wants them to have it. I think probably partly because of, you know, some TV money, and part of it is because they want to try to have a product, you know, to put out on the court. But, you know, the mayor of Atlanta is not thrilled that it's going to be going on, and you know, the players are like, why? If it's unnecessary, why would we do this? I mean, you're opening up the risk and the possibilities for just more exposures and more things, you know, more travel, more hotels, more people you come in contact with. It just adds more headache to this, you know, this weird situation that we're all finding ourselves in right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Shep, we'll catch up with you next week. Stay warm. Throw on an old hat, a pair of long johns. You'll be all right. Mind yourself.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, that's it. Myself and Damien are back tomorrow at 6. A massive thank you to Jarlett Holland, Laura Lee Davis, Ronan Lawler. We'll be back previewing a big weekend, Damien. It's a big weekend.
Plenty. They're all big weekends, Dunica, with the US Open or the Australian Open tennis and...
No.
God knows what else was squeezed
half
in.
Half six
Ireland's,
Sunday.
There
you go.
Family.
There you go.
Come here. My 9-year-old is still at me. Dad, you have to find out who's going to win.
We'll say nothing. Half six Sunday. Okay, yeah. The brilliant Bronagh Tracy's up next.
Live across the nation, this is 42 FM.